Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network, for the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies. From the Popcorn Talk Network and producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, and Phil Svitek, this is I Talk Movies. Long-form interviews with leading members of the film industry. And now, your host of I Talk Movies.
Hey guys, what's going on? It's your boy DJ Jesse Janity here in studio for Popcorn Talk, I Talk Movie Talk. Mm-hmm. I am joined in studio by Sir Todd Williams. You've seen him all over TV, movies, whatnot.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us, Todd.
Oh, thank you, man.
I'm really excited.
This is a very cool setup right here.
Because I am a Vampire Diaries fanatic.
Are you serious?
I am. I do the after show over at AfterBuzz.
So you're a fanboy.
So I was like, what? Connor's coming in?
So, right, baby.
Yes.
Connor came in and then went out, but in style.
Yes.
That's all that counts.
A great arc on that show.
Yeah, it was dope.
But before we get into that, what I was even more excited about is you're from New York.
Yeah, baby.
Yes.
New York.
Where in New York did you grow up?
All around, actually. I was born in Queens, and then I moved to Mount Vernon, which is a suburb, which is right north of the Bronx.
North, yeah.
Lived there until I was about 13, I want to say, and then I moved to the Bronx.
Okay,
stayed
so
there until
so you
I
did high school in the Bronx.
Did high school actually in one half in Mount Vernon and then the other half in Manhattan. Because the reason it's a long story. Well, we got time, don't we?
Well, tell us.
Do you want to hear the whole story?
We're here to hear your story.
Okay. Hey, okay.
So tell us, why did you move?
Well, when I was at the tender age of 2, moved to Mount Vernon. Had a great experience up there. And when I was around, I want to say maybe.
You grew up with both of your parents?
Yeah. They separated when I was 8, but we have a lot of time, so we're going to get into that.
So we're at 2 right now.
Yeah, exactly. So, let's see. When I was about 12, 13, I discovered that acting was what I wanted to do.
Why?
It was interesting. I was watching a lot of shows that had kids my age acting.
Like what? What
show? I mean, it was the show. I'm going to show my age right now. But there was a show, I don't know a lot of people know, it was on PBS, it was called Ghost Rider.
Hell, what? What do you mean?
That
was
saying.
Like epic.
Yeah, so, I don't know how, at the time it was dope.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? In hindsight, I was like, man, this is a really bad show. But, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I was a watcher, man, every week. And, I don't know, seeing those kids do it inspired me to want to do it. Because most of the time I was watching cartoons, you know, it was Thundercats and G.I. Joe and He-Man and all that other stuff. And so,
pause.
Seeing,
do you remember Mighty Max? Nobody ever remembers.
Wait. Mighty Max.
White boy, red hat. His best friend was Virgil the Owl. And when he took his hat off and threw it, it would open a portal. And it was almost like Polly Pocket. The merchandise they sold were these little, like, worlds. No, nobody ever remembers that. But you're naming all the shows that I would think that you.
I'm just saying, Mighty Max?
Yeah.
I've never. You maybe. I'm thinking Silverhawks.
Yeah, like, come on.
Voltron.
You know, all these shows.
But Mighty Max wasn't up there.
Yes, it was.
No,
oh, my gosh. I can't.
He took his hat off and threw it and turned
it
into a portal?
Yes. I'm going to. All right, after the show, I'm going to get you.
We
got to
look it up. I'm going to YouTube it.
All right. So all these shows, they kind of made
me realize these shows,
I could be a part of this.
Right. And I said, you know what, Ma, this is what I want to do. Prior to that.
So you're in Mount Vernon at this time.
In Mount Vernon at this point. Prior to that, I thought that I wanted to be. Anytime I tell this story, people go, what? And it wasn't that I was a perverted little boy. It was just that, you know. But I'm going to get into that.
All
okay.
Right.
I used to tell people that I wanted to be a gynecologist. Now.
All right. At 13 years old, you knew that?
12, 13. But let me tell you why. I used to watch a lot of Cosby Show. And Cosby Show back in the day, it was that, you know, it was super cool. It was a great family. It was fun. Everybody looked like, you know, they loved what they were doing. Dr. Huxtable. He was an OBGYN. And what did Dr. Huxtable do? He made jokes. He lived a funny life. He ate some hoagies.
It looked very
easy, a very easy life. I said, hey, I can get me a house in Brooklyn and live a nice lifestyle. I want to be a gynecologist. Now, the reason why I came up, it was like I couldn't pronounce obstetrician correctly. My mother said, he's an OBGYN. I said, what's that? She said, an obstetrician gynecologist. I went with gynecologist because it was easier to say. Plus, I also thought that if I told people gynecologists, they would look at me like, wow, this kid is like 12 years old and he wants to be a gynecologist? I didn't know what it entailed at the time.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, so anytime people said, what do you want to be? You know, oh, I want to be a fireman. Yeah, everybody wants to be a fireman. You want to be president? You want to be a policeman? Ask me. What do you want to be, sir?
A gynecologist.
And so, that's amazing. Once I realized that you actually have to, you know, go what to medical school and know math and science and all that stuff, which weren't my strong points.
Me either.
I said, I think I need to reevaluate, which I did. And acting was something that was cool. It was reaffirmed, actually. My best friend, on Sundays, he used to go down to this church in the city. I didn't go to church. But he said, hey, you want to come down? I said, cool. At the time, they were having these, plays that they were preparing for. And I remember stepping into, it was like the youth area, and everybody was prepping for this church play and whatnot. And I just loved the energy of it. And that coupled with, you know, the fact that I saw kids on television doing it, made me want to do it even more. Mm-hmm. And so I went up to the youth director and I said, hey, I want to be a part of this. And he said, well, unfortunately, all the parts are taken. I said, I don't care. Just give me something. I don't care. Whatever it is. And so he said, you know what? You could be background, pretty much. I was the chorus. If we're talking Broadway, I was the people in the back just singing along with the songs because it was a musical. And so I remember I used to put I memorized it from front to back and everybody's lines. I was there. I was dedicated. Like, this is what I knew I wanted to do. And that couple were Ghost Rider, man. That was it. That sent me on my way. My mother, she got me introduced to an acting coach and took a few classes. And it was that's essentially how it started.
Now, did you go to a performing high school?
I did. At first, I went to Mount Vernon High School. They didn't have any kind of performing arts there. And in my sophomore year, I said, Ma, I want to go to a performing arts high school. So we went searching and ended up at Talent Unlimited, which was this school in Manhattan. And that was it.
What was that like, going to one of those kind of like a talent high school?
It was interesting because this particular high school was in transition. It was originally, you know, typical type of high school, but they had a program that was concentrated for the arts. So they had, you know, if you went to dance, singing, music, video stuff, acting, they had all of that. And so our days starting out were, we had to be at school at, I want to say, 8 o'clock in the morning, mm-hmm. and we would be out by 6 p.m.
Long day.
Because we had to do our academics in the daytime, and then after like 2, we would get to our performing arts, and that's where it started. Got my manager out of there when I was in my senior year, and started doing it professionally when I was 17.
And so, what was one of your first gigs, like locally in New York?
Man. Okay. I don't know. It depends on who's watching. You might not know. It was called The Current Affair on Fox. We were a block away from a Fox studio in Manhattan. And there was this show called The Current Affair where it was kind of like America's Most Wanted, but different.
Okay.
And they came to the high school because they were looking for people to be part of a reenactment. And so everybody was auditioning and whatnot. And they ended up picking me for the killer. And it was one of the coolest experiences that I ever had.
So this was your first real audition?
This was the first. This was something that I actually got paid for. It wasn't an, I don't even know if it, I don't even consider it an audition. Somebody just came to the school. I guess they were, man, it was a long time ago. I don't know. To be honest with you, I don't know how I ended up with it. I didn't say anything. You know, it was a reenactment. So it was silent. It was like doing a silent movie. But
you got it.
Yeah, I got it and called everybody up to let them know that, you know,
I'm the man.
I made it. Reenactment. Fox, check me out. And so they did. And that was it. I had the bug. I didn't care.
So I read that you went to NYU to study music business because you were concerned about a backup plan. Mm-hmm. So where did that concern for you from high school to college come in? Was that your concern? Dude, was that something that your family had kind of put
into
you?
That was my lovely, caring family that was putting that seed in my head, telling me that I need to have a backup plan, because you never know. There's a lot of actors out there. There's a lot, you know, you never know, you never know. And
you always drop the backup plan anyway.
Oh, dude, that's what I'm saying.
That's not like, if you had just let me focus on the plan A to begin with, I would not be 30 years old.
Still paying off my loans. Daggone it. Because NYU is crazy expensive. Yo, it was crazy.
Sally may call me one more time.
Yo, I got to the point where, and I always knew what I wanted to do. The minute that I fell in love with performing, I knew that's what was going to make me happy in life. And, you know, you got parents, you got people telling you they've traveled a certain road and they've been told that this is the way it's supposed to be done. And I was the dreamer out of the family. My father, he graduated from Columbia. My mother graduated from NYU. My brother graduated from Georgetown. And then you got me, who's the, you know, the dropout. And so everybody was like, they were always supportive.
What does your brother do?
My brother, he works, he doesn't do anything that he did in his major. He got a major in sociology. Originally he wanted to be pre-med, but it was just, he realized that wasn't his thing. So now he works in, let me get this right, I don't want to get it wrong. Because he just moved jobs. Sorry, Keith. He manages. No, that's what he used to do.
But he basically, he's not.
He's in the medical field, but it's not necessarily what he wants to do. So now he's branching out into entrepreneurship. So that's what he's doing right now.
So at a younger age, you had kind of already knew this.
Already
is what you wanted
already
to
knew.
Do. Your parents just wasn't hearing it.
They weren't listening. I was like, Ma, I know. Like I was straddling the fence for a long time, and they're like, No, no, no. And I was miserable. I remember I was sitting there going to classes I didn't want to go to. Now, granted,
NYU?
Yeah. Now, granted,
why music business?
Okay, because songwriting is something that I've always been in love with.
Okay,
songwriting is what I did prior to me acting. I guess this is okay. I didn't know I wanted to be a songwriter. It was just something that I did as a hobby. I started writing poetry in the sixth grade. And my teacher at the time told my mother, he was like, yo, your son is really talented. So she tried to cultivate that. And over time, I would write poetry, you know, haikus and this and this and that. And eventually it turned into songwriting. I was the guy that was really breaking down the songs. I wasn't just listening to the hook. It was like, oh, that first verse was, oh, the metaphor you used in this and that, that was dope. And so I started writing music. I would take just tracks that I heard on the radio and just write to them. And over time, you know, I would write them and then put them away, write them and put them away. In high school, when I ended up with my manager, there was an opportunity. It was me and a bunch of guys that I went to school with who started branching out into music. So the goal was that I was going to write the R&B because that was me. I was the R&B dude. I was going to write. They had a female artist. They had a male artist. They had some rappers. And we were going to, you know, I would head over the songwriting for that. They would do the hip hop stuff and we would blow up and make a lot of money and be all good. But it didn't pan out. And at the time.
Can you sing?
You know what? People tell me that I got a really nice voice. And every Christmas, I do some karaoke there's a Christmas party at my acting school, and the ladies do love it.
Is that what it is?
I'm not gonna lie, but if you ask me out in public, can you sing? I'll be like, I'm all right. I've actually recorded myself just to see what people hear.
Uh-huh.
It's actually pretty sexy, I gotta say.
Well, can we get like a little sample? You know, I mean, I'm building.
Man, I know. Okay, first I'm gonna tell you that I suck, because that's what I always do. I'm terrible. Don't expect anything. Okay.
And now watch. Here comes.
No. Don't. No. Trust me. Because if I'm nervous, if my breathing is wrong, I'm not a trained singer. Know that. Although I know if I had training, I'd probably be dope.
Right, I'm seeing.
Okay, let me see. What am I going to sing? I'll sing what I usually sing for karaoke, which is Can You Stand the Rain by New Edition. And I'm just doing Johnny Gill's part because nothing against Ralph Tresvant, but it's a little too high for my voice. All right, you ready?
Clear that palate.
Yeah, well, I need some honey lemon tea. All right. I need a beat. Wait. Okay. Do you know how it starts off?
Nope.
Okay. Doesn't matter. One, two, three, four. On a perfect day, I know that I can count on you. If that's not possible, tell me, can you weather the storm? See? Oh. And then Ralph Tresvant comes in. Who will stand by me through the good times, the bad times? She will always be right there.
All
right,
Tom Williams, well, we better get a CD from you.
Well, that's the thing. Ralph Tresvant, I wasn't singing. I was just getting through it to get to the chorus. Oh, but then you cut me off.
You're too humble. What's your sign?
Virgo.
I'm a Virgo, too.
When's your birthday?
September 5th, day after Beyonce.
September 11th.
Boom.
Boom. And I always
that's
like
why I
mail.
See you doubt yourself. Because that I right just, there, if you've been writing and then you went to school for music business, like I'm seeing like a thing here. And then I was also going to ask you, do you write screenplays?
You know what? I'm in the process.
Because I'm sensing the brain is like.
Yeah, I'm in the process of working on that. I got some ideas that I've been harboring for a long time.
Another Virgo problem.
And I'm a thinker, man. I'm an overthinker.
Yeah, I'll overthink
myself out of something. So I've really been getting into the mindset of just saying fuck it, man. It just anything that comes. Can I say fuck it?
Yeah.
Okay. Anything that comes. She's like, oh my god. Sorry.
Most PR people didn't.
Yeah,
know.
I was like, oh,
don't
no.
like what I'm hosting. So,
where was I?
About screenwriting.
Screenwriting. Yeah. So I think that I'm getting into the mindset that if there's an idea that moves me, then chances are there's something that the universe is saying to go, yo, do what you got to do to get it out and not second guess that. And if I want it to be good, then just put in the work to learn how to understand structure and plot and character development and all of that stuff, because I would think of the entire task of writing a screenplay and it felt so daunting and overwhelming, so I would just be like, you know what, maybe I'll just pitch it or something.
Yep.
But will somebody be able to really get what it is that I'm trying to convey? So at the moment I'm just taking my time, but I'm not putting any time frame on it. I'm just taking it as it comes, and so far, as I've been learning how, you know, about structure and whatnot, it's slowly coming together without me having to do that much work. Mm-hmm. It's strange. How quickly it'll get out. 'Cause right now it's in the beginning stages. I pretty much outlined the entire thing. Haven't got to dialogue yet, but it's coming. And I think it's pretty dope.
You gotta unlock the Todd that was walked into that church that day.
Yo,
and said, I'm gonna study the whole script and get it done right now because it's mine.
That's what I'm saying. Ownership.
It's coming.
That's what it's about.
I sense it.
It really is about ownership. And the older I get, the more I have to tap into that 17-year-old self. Because the 17-year-old self, he was like, yo, fuck it, we could do this.
He didn't have scars.
Nope, not at all. There was no pain. There was no, you know, letdown. Yep. There was none of that stuff. There was just hope, promise, and yo. In my mind, at 17, I was like, 5 years. Give me this. Give me 5 years. It's going to be like, boom, millions of dollars. And then 20 years later, it's like, Todd, we can still do this,
it's
man.
It's coming.
It's to the point, I look at it like this. When you do what you love, I've already, you know, I've pushed off the shore and I've been paddling.
And your work is very consistent.
Knowing that land is on the other side. I'm to the point where if I look back, I don't even see land anymore. So I can only go forward, and I know it's going to come. It's just, It's not that it hasn't come. It's just that you're always wanting more.
It's a Virgo. You never as much as everyone can think you're perfect and the best, you're like, man, shit.
No, yes. I feel like I'm always growing. And every time I see something, the last thing I did, I'm always like, I could have done that better. There's room for growth on that, which is not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
Hunger for wanting to grow and be more and be better and progressive overload. It's like when I work out, the only way that you're going to grow that muscle is if each week you push yourself a little more. You put in an extra rep, or you put in an extra set, or you do something that will put just a manageable amount of stress on you. Because in that way, growth is inevitable.
What was one of the biggest, we talked about that 17-year-old self, didn't have scars. What was one of the biggest kind of letdowns for you once getting into, you'd be part of Lyft, Third Watch, Tilts, you've done video games to TV shows to movies.
Yeah.
What was like a really key point for you as in this world of entrepreneurship? People don't talk about depression, and that's something that a lot of actors or creative people go through, and it's never spoken about. What was kind of a moment for you that kind of put you in that mood, and then how did you get out of it?
It was probably, it's interesting. I've had a very nice progressive career. I never went 0 to 100. I've always gone step by step. So whereas with the current affair, it was just a reenactment. The next thing I did after that, I was supposed to be back, and this was One Life to Live in New York. I was supposed to be just background. I got bumped up to an under 5, and then from there it was Law and Order, which was a one day guest star, and then next Law and Order I was a major guest star, and then I had a recurring on Third Watch, and then I got a series regular on Tilt. So everything was like bit by bit by bit. I felt the movement, I felt the progression at that point in time. Once you get to that series regular, it's like, okay, let's keep this train going. You know what I'm saying? I put in the work. Let's do this. The last thing was, there was a great, great series that I did called Chicago Code on Fox.
Yeah.
Sean Ryan, Delroy Lindo, Jason Clark, Jennifer Beals, Matt Lauria. It was dope in so many aspects. Just the working environment, the material, and the fact that, I was making some good money. And
what was different about that set for you?
It was just there was a lot of camaraderie. It was just a really good time. And I hear a lot of stories about people, you're on a set and this person has this ego. This person has that ego. Like, oh man, yeah, I'm making money, but I'm miserable because, this person, they're miserable and they make everybody else miserable. It wasn't like that here. We I have relationships with these people that remain to this day. And so to have that and the promise of, hey, you know what, this is a show that's, we're going to go another season just because we just hit our stride. But I think honestly, it was right on the cusp of DVR. And when people were, watching, 3 days when they did the Live Plus 3 and the Live Plus 7 and all that stuff, they didn't really implement that. And so our ratings were pretty, they weren't great. They weren't doing a 5.0 or whatever it is that they were looking for. So it ended up getting canceled. And everybody was pretty bummed out, and I was like, it's all good. We'll work it out. We'll be moving on to the next thing. But deep down, it sucked.
Yep.
Because it's like,
my job.
Yo, A, as an actor, we spend most of our time looking for work. So when you're actually working, it feels damn good. And not just that, but when you're working, it almost feels like confirmation that, yeah, I actually am doing it right. And so when things don't work out, it's a bummer. And then when you have an idea that, hey, you know, in my mind, I looked at it like you have a big break and that's it. You get this one thing and then it's like, boom, stratosphere, money, you know, security, all of that stuff. What it really is a series of breaks. You have a little break here, you get a little break there, you know, this does a little something. And in my mind, this was the big break. This was what all of the time that I put in was waiting for. This is the manifestation of everything that I was putting in. And when we didn't get picked up for another season, it was just like, dang. And it was back. It felt like I was back at square one. I was auditioning, doing the same thing that I was doing before. And so I started just questioning myself, which is it's the devil. Never do it. And there must have been a depression or something that was going on that I just didn't admit to. And it took time for me to really sit down and go, you know what? I really am down about this. And I really have to be honest with that. Everybody's seen me moving on to different things. There was a year where it was just dry. There was just nothing going on. And it seemed like everybody else hopped on something else. And I was like, yo, what is going on? Is it me? I'm never one to not be happy for other people ever. But I do start to make reevaluations of what is it that I'm not doing.
Virgo.
What can I be doing to get the same result that they're doing, even though I can't compare myself to them because they're completely different people? We're all, as actors, you don't want to look at yourself as product, but that's what we are. We're all a very individual product. And it took a long time for me to understand that it's not that I'm not good enough. It's not that, you know, I don't possess the skills to have a very successful career in this. It's a business first and foremost. And my product is such that maybe this person isn't looking for this product at the time. They want to have this. And there's a million other variables that go into it. But ultimately, I got into the headspace of, okay, when I go into these rooms, it's not about hierarchy. Like, this person is better. They have more credits. They have this. No. It's, I'm going to use a car analogy. I always use a car analogy. It's like, you got a Lamborghini here. You got a Ferrari over there. You got, you know, a Bugatti over here. You got a Bentley over there. And we're going into this room, and the people are going, based on the material that we have, what would fit best? Would it be the Bentley? The Lamborghini? The Porsche? Every car is good in its own right, but has different characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're like, hey, we're going to go with the Bentley. Now, the Lamborghini shouldn't sit there and go, man,
I'm not a Bentley.
Yeah, I'm not. You're a fucking Lamborghini, dude. Just trust. Somebody's going to walk in and go, I want that Lambo. So I had to get into that mind space, which took a little bit, because there's nothing but highs and lows. And I don't know. I hope that I answered that question.
And you did. And from there, you got Switched at Birth, Vampire Diaries, Teen Wolf.
Yeah.
So obviously, me being a Vampire Diary fan, what was that set like? Because I've heard it's
blessed.
Really like family.
Yo, it is. I've been so blessed. I don't have any of those experiences where it's like assholish actors and
the divas on set.
Divas. No, it was cool from the jump. I remember I was in the area where all of our rooms are. It's kind of like a dorm.
Because you guys film in Atlanta.
In Atlanta, yeah. And so, you know, I'd be over here, and then Steven be over there, and then, you know, other cast members would be over here and there. And I remember I was in my room, getting, you know, just unpacking, getting my stuff together. And Stephen McQueen walks by and he's like, yo. And I'm like, yo. And then everybody else comes in. Cat Graham, I think Nina was there, and it was just this one, like, hey, what's up?
Welcome.
Because it's weird when you go into a situation where there's a show that's been on air for a number of years, you know that relationships have already been established. So when you come in, you're kind of coming in with the mindset of the new kid at school, and you don't know what you're gonna walk into. So,
and it's very successful, so there could be drama.
Yeah, so it could be drama, you don't know. And so to have such a welcoming and warm reception, I said, wow, this is cool. I can get used to this. And that's exactly what it was.
Now, like, have you known what your character was for that?
No, they're really secretive over there. Initially when I went in for the audition, it was for, they gave me old sides. So I thought that I was talking to Tyler about some moon thing. And I was like, werewolves. And it was a CW. And I was like, okay, whatever. And it's not like I followed the Vampire Diaries. I didn't follow Vampire Diaries at the time. So I did it. Got the call, went out there, and they would just give you what they gave you for that episode. And it's like, where are we going with this? Is it, what am I going to do? Well, you'll find out in the next episode type
of
situation.
How do you prep for that?
I think, you know what? There's a lot of frustration that used to come from that, because I want to know. I think that's more,
awesome.
I think that's more of a film thing. Because films, it's open and closed, you know, 90 minutes, 120 minutes. You have a beginning, middle, end. There's a character arc. You need to know everything, because the past, the future, everything is told in that 120 minutes. With television, it's more like life, because your character arc could be over 6 years. Mm-hmm. And so you don't know where you're going to go. And it's not like in life we know where we're going. We don't. I mean, we have an idea, but then there's always something, you know, there's a curveball that's thrown, or the plan doesn't work out, or, you know, our wants change. And when I approached it from that standpoint, like, you know what? I don't need to know, because in life I don't know.
Right.
So let's just keep it moving. Let's just, hey, I kill vampires. Let's do it. Well, you give me enough that I can build from that. Okay. There might be a little frustration, just because there might be some key thing that comes in the third episode. You're like, if I knew that, I could have really made that hot. But outside of that,
well,
I've gotten
that,
used to it.
Because that role, I am not, like, it was a role I loved to hate you. And when you left the show, it was kind of like a little bit like,
bittersweet.
Because that character could have done some other things with that show.
It, you know what? I thought it was very cool. I mean, I went out pretty cool. Nina was sucking on my neck. That was pretty dope.
I mean, if you're going to. How do you feel she about, have you right. heard it? She's leaving the show, the episode
I
just
did.
Last night.
I did.
I'm confused of where we're going to go with it now.
Because that was pretty much the cornerstone of the whole show. But hey, somebody knows something.
You know?
And there's enough in that universe that they can play with. I mean, they went everywhere.
You've played a lot of characters, different types of characters, supernatural, crime. What's your favorite to play that you've played so far?
I don't have a favorite. And I tell you why. Because there are individual challenges to each one. And like we were talking about earlier, how the purpose of film and television is to shine a light on some area of the human condition, of the human struggle, of hopes and dreams of a particular person in a particular situation that the masses may not know about or that they can sympathize with. What I love about it is that I can essentially have an experience that could be from a fictional or non-fictional origin that explores different areas of myself. So with Connor, there was a lot of even though, oh, I don't, if people didn't see it, I don't want to, okay, I didn't have control over some things because of what was going on with me. But there were past experiences and other things that helped fuel my reasons for doing what I was doing. Having to try to explore that within, you know, a story of hybrids and werewolves and vampires and this and that, it's different than how I would do it for, say, Chicago Code, where I was a cop with a completely different set of circumstances. My favorites are all of them because they're different pieces of me. They're different areas of me that have been amplified. Fears or pain or regrets or insecurities or hopes, dreams, nightmares, all that stuff.
Well, and it all kind of sounds like the definition to your new movie, San Andreas.
Yeah.
Pain, fear, scare. Because I don't know if I really want to see the movie. I'm really skeptical about actually going to see it.
You know what? I think a lot of Californians.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I don't know. I might have to move back to Mass.
The Californians like, oh, that's nice. Everybody's just like, yeah, San Andreas. Woo! Let's go to rock. Yeah. And Californians are like, yo, because everybody keeps saying it's not about if, it's about when.
Right.
And so it would really suck. And then you have this stuff going on in Nepal, which is just totally unfortunate. But there's a reality that's there, which for people living in the area that it's supposed to be happening in, could be on a different level of terrifying than it is for someone who lives in, you know,
so
New York.
What is it? What's your character, and then what can we expect from this movie that we don't think we're going to get?
I've told other people that. Let me start with the story itself. You have, because it's a blockbuster, and because it's a huge, you know, summer action disaster film, you of course have a great degree of spectacle,
right?
And so, in that respect,
like, I picture Dante Creek on crack.
Yo, like, yeah, that was with the volcano, yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Otherwise, yeah, but nobody lives around a volcano,
right? That's why I could watch. That's why I could watch that movie,
right? Exactly. You're like, oh, this is cool, and the people near Mount Vesuvius, they're like, you know, I don't like this.
The day the world ends, or something like that. Yeah, I can't.
Oh,
I can't do that stuff. Yeah, no, I can't.
Yeah, 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 because it could happen. So you have the spectacle aspect, where the earthquake takes the forefront. So some people are going to look at, you know, there's the ground shaking, there's things crumbling, there's people running, screaming, there's, you know, and then Dwayne saving people, and there's that, the action portion of it. And then you have the character driven story, which is about Dwayne, who plays Ray, who is a helicopter search and rescue pilot for the LA Fire Department. And when we meet him, he is going through some personal things with his family. Not necessarily that they are at odds with each other, but due to something that has occurred, he's at a point where he's really become married to his job. And his wife has sort of moved on into another relationship. His daughter is grown up and now she's going off to college. And so there's this sense that everybody's kind of migrating away as a unit. The catalyst is this earthquake that makes him make the decision that, no, I have to go and save my family. Not just physically, but save his family from falling apart. So that's that. Where I come in, Marcus Cowlings, I'm 1/4 of the search and rescue team of hunky men with facial hair and all that stuff. And I play Ray's best friend. And I play a very specific, I have a very specific role in the film where the theme is about family. In my mind, it's essentially about family, not an earthquake. if you look at the advertisements, it's where will you be, who will you be with, who, and that's what it comes down to. It's like, when you are in a situation like this, when the world is literally crumbling around you, when you're fearing for your life, when you don't know if you're going to see tomorrow, who are you going to look to and want to actually be with? Who are you going to call, or who are you going to wish that you would have said something to? So it's about, that's what it's about. And as Marcus, that is, I'm reiterating that theme to him. It's like, Ray, you're fucking up. You got things that you got to do. I don't say it exactly like that, but as his friend, I'm planting seeds, and eventually a seed sprouts, and
so you're the conscience.
He takes it. Yes.
Jiminy Cricket.
Mm-hmm. The dude on his shoulder. Yeah, that's good. I'm Dwayne's conscience.
There you go.
And there you go.
So the movie comes out May 29th.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm up in airs. I'm gonna go see it, obviously, because everyone here is gonna go see it.
Yo,
but it does sketch me out. So, like, working on that kind of a set, and you know, being out here, you know, was there any kind of real moments where you're like,
not at all? Because I shot in Australia. Or? It was all good. I wasn't thinking about LA at all. It was beautiful, Gold Coast, Australia. That's where we were at, and at the WB stages. And it was interesting, the whole, it's so mind-blowing to see the finished product, because when you're there, you know, it's
how this gonna different. Work out.
It's so different. It's like, really? This is, all right. And then you see the finished product, and it's like, whoa, it's amazing. It's the computer generated. It's amazing what they do. I see why it takes so much time, because the detail. Because
when did you guys finish wrapping for that?
I personally wrapped in, I want to say, it was like a year ago.
Oh,
it was
really?
like late May. Yeah, late May. And then it went on, and then I think they picture wrapped probably in June of last year, I want to say.
And then before we wrap up, I want to talk about this movie, Silver Skies, we were talking about before.
Yeah.
Now, we don't have a release date for it.
No.
But what's the general synopsis of the movie?
Well, basically, it's about a group of, I don't want to say elderly, because they're not elderly. They're people that are over 65 who...
Elderly. I mean, let's
until we get there, and it's like, hey, it's not elderly.
Right, and you're like, well, if you can order in that little corner section on the Denny's menu.
Yeah, I need a better euphemism for older. I'd say age, well-aged, golden-yeared people who have all come together at this home, basically, a retirement home. And they get news that the retirement home is going to be converted into condos, and they don't have the money to pay for it. So... it's about the protagonist, who is actually one of the residents that nobody really knows about. She's a mystery, and she goes about essentially trying to save the nursing home. Nursing home? Is that really what it's called? Retirement home. I play her financial advisor, who is trying to steer her in the right direction, because financially, it doesn't make sense based on the numbers. And so I try to coerce her into doing something different, but she's too passionate about it. So we have this relationship, this back and forth kind of thing that goes on. And it was a really neat film. Like I said, shining light on different areas of the human condition. I haven't seen a lot of films that focus on people that are over a certain age. And there's a lot of different challenges and things that come up that we don't think about in our 20s.
Talk about or bring to.
Yeah, 20s and 30s. Everything from physical health to new relationships. I mean, what do you do when you've been married for, you know, 30, 40 years and your spouse passes away, and then you're trying to find, you know, companionship or love? And it's, I don't know anything about that. But what was interesting is that I could empathize with the loss, and I could empathize with the uncertainty of knowing if there's going to be anybody that will care for you or be, you know, because the kids are grown mm-hmm. and they have their lives, and here you are and your body's deteriorating and you're alone, and oh man, I'm feeling it just now.
No, you know, I mean, what I'm saying? It's a world that a lot of people put their later, you know, grandparents
later.
Or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, it's later.
And they don't want to think about it because it's scary.
Nope.
It's scary to think.
Yo, you think about, you have somebody, because I think naturally humans, we want companionship. And, you know, people, they strive to get married and just to cleave to someone. And you find that someone, and then you spend all this time together. Now, granted, it's never going to be perfect. They might get on your nerves, but there's a love that's there. And then just imagine 30 years of seeing somebody every day and then not.
No, my grandma went crazy.
I could imagine. Who went first between my grandparents? My grandmother went first, and then my grandfather, he didn't go too long after her. But I think honestly,
you can see it in their soul.
Yeah, something dies. See, I don't want to go into that area, man. We'll talk about them when we're old.
But I do appreciate someone creating a film like that to have that type of conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with Doubt. I don't know if you remember with Meryl Streep and
mm-hmm.
what's his name? That was those kind of movies. It's stuff like let's bring it to
let's
the forefront.
Let's talk about that.
You know, all the same alien movie that we see all the time.
Well, I think and that's the thing, you have the business of it,
yep.
where it's about making money, and then you have what the medium's purpose is supposed to be. And so, like finances, I think it's supposed to be a portfolio. You have your, you know, you have your tent poles, you have your blockbusters, and then you have your real character-driven stories that really talk about just different areas of life and told from different perspectives. That's all that it is. It's like, you got a million people, they're going to have a million perspectives. And with this medium, ideally, you should be able to tell each person's perspective, because it creates awareness. And I think I feel it creates growth.
Mm-hmm.
Like me and you, we're looking at this cup, but we're looking at it from two different viewpoints. And I'm like, hey, no, there's this and that going on. You're like, no, we're looking at the same cup.
Yeah,
and if that represents life, I mean, think about it. That's what it's about, man. That's why people should travel and other cultures and just ingest everything, because it's completely enlightening. And ideally, that's what film is supposed to do. It's supposed to enlighten. I mean, granted, you got your junk food. That's great, but you need your soul food mm-hmm. too. You know.
Need them nutrients.
Need them nutrients. The macros, son.
Well, Todd, it has been a pleasure of mine to have deep conversations with Todd Williams here at yeah. I Talk.
Thank you, sir.
May 29th, make sure you guys check out San Andreas, yeah, blockbuster
yes,
hit.
Yes. And a great character-driven story as well.
Is this the music that we normally go out to?
I can't even hear it.
Can you not? Am I the only one hearing this right now? Or is this like a San Andreas thing? Oh, there we go. Okay. Because I was like, where are we going with this? What are we turning into?
Which,
you can't hear it? Turn it up.
Yeah, turn it up.
Turn up.
Oh.
This seems like after the crash. Yeah, like just kind of looking over everything.
Is this Sia?
Is that Sia? Thumbs
up. It's a remake of California Dreamin'.
Yeah, I think this is it. Wait. Yep. Is this the Sia version? She killed it. No, this isn't the one. But either way, I remember when I first saw the ads and they had the California Dreaming with the everything being destroyed, I was like, that was dope.
That was. Well, y'all, I'm going to be scared of my seatmate.
Yeah, me too.
Watching, y'all. All right, guys. Well, thank you for tuning in. Todd, where can all of your fans follow you?
Let's see. Twitter, Todd Williams. Easy. Instagram, I just changed it. Todd Williams Official. Hit me up. I answer back, man. I love the talk. That's the thing. I had to chill from Twitter for a little bit because I was on it all day. day just talking to people, especially after Vampire Diaries.
No, yeah, because
dude, I spoke to people all over the world. It was ridiculous. I learned Portuguese. I learned German. I learned Russian. I learned Polish. I was saying hello in 20 languages by the time I was done with that thing. But yeah, Todd Williams, Twitter, Todd Williams Official, IG, and that's it.
There y'all have it. May 29th, San Andreas. Make sure you guys hit us up at The Popcorn Talk everywhere. And also make sure you guys hit me up at DJ Jesse J. Till next time, peace.
Later, y'all.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Spitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of The Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.